The fantasy football offseason is long. After a difficult year, it can be longer for some than others. Months of anticipation, researching, and scheming all build to one moment. Draft day is almost a religious experience in the Tiger Township Fantasy Football League. 7 months of fasting, unable to talk trades or look at a roster of players, leads to this one day where the 12 league members make their pilgrimage and hope that their offerings of plans and preparation are rewarded by the fantasy gods. This is Tiger Township Fantasy Football. This is draft day. This is Hard Bids, inside the 2021 TTFFL Draft.
It's all about draft weekend. Draft weekend is the mecca.
Well, I think that the draft is absolutely the best day of the year. It is so much fun. There's so much hope in the air.
Just a lot of different emotions going through my head at the same time. Basically, it was just me sitting there wondering, is this real? And it was.
Badly enough that I was bleeding my own blood everywhere.
I don't believe that that is a strategy that can lead to a team ever having success.
I found myself looking at his roster and just wondering, what is he trying to accomplish with this?
The Tennessee sun reaches its zenith. It's high noon in Nashville. League members polish off a barbecue feast prepared by a man with one leg and purge the sins of yesterday's hot chicken. There is an energy in the living room of the lavish Airbnb that only draft day can bring. Hope springs eternal at the TTFFL draft. The slate is clean. The field is level. Whether you are the reigning champion or the annual laughingstock, on draft day, everyone has the hope that today is the day they make their mark.
Well, I think that the draft is absolutely the best day of the year. It is so much fun. There's so much hope in the air. And I know that the championship is the most important for the two people there, but draft is hope for everybody, and it is definitely the highlight of the season and the year.
The so-called fantasy experts love to say, you don't win your league at the draft, it's the moves you make throughout the season. And I mean, it's true, but draft's pretty important.
Draft is everything. You know, fantasy football is all luck, but it's not at the beginning, because it's just how are you going to build your team, you know?
I mean, it's probably the most important setup of your season. I mean, if you start bad at the draft, you don't have the building blocks to make your team to finish the way it is. I mean, if you have a bad draft, then you can't make the trades that you might need in the season when you have positional needs or things go awry due to injuries. So you kind of have to set yourself up well, and if you don't, you're going to be scrambling all year.
But before we can get this thing underway, there has to be an order to things. The decision of who nominates when in an auction may not be as important as a traditional snake draft's picks, but the order does need to be set somehow. Enter SmackDown vs. Raw, 2007.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
When Chibi told me he wanted to do a simulated video game Royal Rumble to decide the nomination order, I mean, I just immediately knew that I was going to go create 12 characters to represent everyone in the league. You know, Yasiel Puig for Casey, Kitty Rogers for Pat, a Satan for Dave. I just couldn't help myself. But I really didn't anticipate it being legitimately just so much fun for everybody.
Oh, it was electric. I honestly don't think we can come up with a better way to pick a nomination other than the Royal Rumble. That was amazing.
Yeah, 10 out of 10. I thought it was amazing. It was so much fun. And it was just perfect. It was absolutely brilliant and a blast and really set the tone for everything. I loved it.
Oh, the Royal Rumble was electric. It's all about draft weekend. Draft weekend is the mecca for this league. Like, it's great that we can all get together and group me every day, but it's all about us coming together. So the more dumb events that we can have at the draft, the better.
2010 draft icon Kitty Rogers emerged victorious, winning the first overall nomination for Pat Tyner. The fun and games are over. Kind of. It's time for Pat to make the draft's first nomination. And of course, you gotta do it in style.
Well, the beauty of that is, before my first nom, I was trying to, you know, really set the tone for the draft. So I tried a shotgun of beer, ended up cutting myself, not really badly, but, you know, badly enough that I was bleeding my own blood everywhere. And I didn't even really think it was Tom Brady who was going to be the first nom, but kind of just scrambled. After I had cut myself, it had taken me a good 2 minutes to shotgun this beer because I'm spilling blood everywhere trying to clean up. So I decided to get in there and, you know, Super Bowl MVP Tom Brady was the first one that came to mind.
I thought it was a great choice. And then it was just kind of funny because Fano threw out a high-ish number. Like I wasn't, just from my ranking system, I wasn't expecting Tom Brady to go for that much. And Fano kind of said it and everyone just kind of froze and looked around like, what just happened? So I thought it was going to be like another Sobey Marshawn Lynch situation again, Marshawn Lynch for $50. And then I'm pretty sure there was a couple bids after it, but it was just, I'll never forget that when Tom Brady, everyone's kind of like, yeah, Tom's eventually going to fall off a cliff, but it turned out Fano was right this year, and he had a good fantasy season.
I wanted him. I wanted him from day one. I thought he was going to be the MVP of the season. Coming off the Super Bowl took me for a little bit of a surprise. But, you know, it's a shame because I'm so scared early in drafts. I probably would never have and never will have another first selection guy ever since I spent $500 million on Aaron Rodgers several years ago as the number one overall guy. So I'm often scared. When the first selection or first nomination comes out. So I was disappointed a bit that Tom was first because I wanted him.
I loved it. I mean, we all know how that turned out. I went up $4 and he was on my team.
I liked the nomination and I kind of wish that I would have pounced on Tom Brady because the worst part about me during the draft was I got outplayed in the quarterback market and that just derailed my season. I had a plan going in with getting one of those top guys. So when he put up Tom Brady and he went for that amount, I kind of adjusted my QB rankings from there. And obviously that was a goodbye for Fano getting Tom Brady at 44. And it kind of, like I said, pigeonholed me into not being able to get any good quarterbacks. And I think that's what actually derailed my season.
I'm just generally not a huge fan of the kind of the mid-tier nomination because Brady ended up being top three quarterback this year and Stefano got a huge great deal on him because people had, hey, there's seven other quarterbacks I put over Tom Brady. I don't need to pay 50, like what, 44 for him right now. The way quarterbacks went this draft, you go the first seven quarterbacks, people are like, oh, Tom, I need Tom Brady. I don't have one. He probably goes in the 50s or something, gets a little extra. So sometimes I think, sometimes it definitely works. I just think sometimes, looking back, I think Brady goes for a little bit more of the way quarterbacks are going.
At $44, Tom Brady was the draft's ninth most expensive quarterback. In a draft where a record $1,011 were spent at the position, following the previous year's all-time low of $846. Coming back with a vengeance to prove that in the Tiger Township, quarterback is still king.
I'm new to the league, so I looked back at what the quarterbacks were going for last year, and I kind of went off that, so I thought I'd be able to get one of those top guys and then maybe get one of the rookies that I had faith in, or like a lower tier guy, like a Kirk Cousins or someone like that. And people just kept spending, and I thought it was going to stop, and it just never stopped. So then it made me overpay for Tannehill, made me overpay for Cam because I panicked, made me overpay for Daniel Jones. So it definitely hurt me, and that's why that's why I derailed my season, because of the quarterback market.
Oh, completely blown away. I love it. I love that our league values the quarterback so much, because it's the most important position in team sports, and they should be valued high. It wasn't what I was planning for, and I really tried to stick to my plan, and I think that definitely backfired on me this year.
Yeah, the new guys really fell for that little 2020 quarterback spending bluff there. Took it, I guess, as the rule instead of the exception. I think, you know, for a lot of us who have been around this league for a while, we knew that, you know, you're going to have to spend some money to get quarterbacks.
Quarterbacks in our league are always going to be at a premium, I think, going forward. Just with the way the league is going, you need at least one horse. And if you don't have that, you don't have a chance to win week in and week out.
I can't say I'm too surprised, but we did see its effects, you know, especially on the wide receiver position. Gave a bunch of bargains there, so it definitely made it interesting, but I can't say I'm overly surprised.
I think what was more surprising was how cheap receivers went for the most part. You had your high-end guys, but I felt like there's some receivers that were really undervalued that people got great deals on. Quarterback-wise, we have a long history at that position in this league, and maybe you can chalk it up to a lot of people just had similar mindsets going into the year that's where a team really starts and ends for the most part. And so, no, I'd say, you know, it was something I expected. I had Josh Allen. I thought I actually got him cheaper than I thought he was going to go. You know, I thought he was going to be $75-$80 probably, and I got him for less than that. So I was thrilled.
This year, more than any, it felt like there was a clear top tier of quarterbacks, and then the fall off was substantial. It turned out to not be the case as much as what I suspected, but I knew I needed at least one star quarterback, and I had to spend to get that.
And spend he did. Going into 2021, Grant Sehner was known as someone who did not spend big. In the 7 auctions previous to this one, Grant had only broken the $50 mark twice, with his most expensive purchase being $57. But records are made to be broken. We're going to play you a clip from the nomination of Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott. The audio quality is poor. You will have to try to filter out the side talk and ABBA's Dancing Queen. And you still won't actually be able to hear the controversial moment in question. But we have decided to play the clip to show the speed at which things occurred. Max Julian is going to nominate Dak Prescott for $30. Rax will immediately jump the bidding to $50. Fano bids 52, and Grant jumps in with 67. What happens here is a side conversation between Pat Tyner and David Devine. Devine asks Tyner how much was spent on Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson. Pat says out loud, 66. You will not be able to hear this, but Grant Sehner does, and immediately outbids Tyner's non-bid with $67. Here's the clip.
First and the last time Grant's going to give me one today.
$30.
Who?
Dak for 50 to Rax.
67.
Yeah, you have
67,
to.
Dak Prescott to Grant. 67.
Wow. I was talking about David.
All right, 67, Dak Prescott to Grant going
wait,
once.
Wait. No,
we're at 67. 67 going twice. 67 sold to Grant.
Okay. What just happened?
He jumped from 56 to 67.
Everybody okay with that?
He said it twice.
I thought
I said 60 something.
Just want to make sure everyone's okay with that.
I looked at it and said 67.
So the thing was, at that point, I still did not have what I felt like was an elite quarterback. David really needs to figure out draft etiquette, because for him to have that correspondence during the drafting of a elite quarterback was unfounded. I was extremely disappointed. The problem was, I had already put my bid in, so I could not fight the fact that I placed a bid. But for David to be asking those questions mid-draft for a QB prospect with a team that had multiple wide receivers that were going to be drafted was unbelievable. I couldn't fight it at that point, and I still won't fight it today, but it was really disappointing to see someone of David's stature to bring that up mid-draft of a guy that clearly was very good this season.
I was just happy it happened to Grant, but it was completely innocent. I wasn't trying to mess up anyone up, but it was kind of funny that it happened to the draft police. No better person for it to happen to.
I mean, kudos to Grant for, I guess, just, you know, letting that lie, you know, play it as a lie, I guess you could say, and just, you know, not really making that big of a stink about it. But if I was in his case, I would have, you know, lost my shit.
I was sweating a little bit because I thought it was the first time I was going to have to step in. Cooler heads prevailed, thank goodness. You know, Grant owned up to it immediately. There was really very little discussion in terms of like, oh, I deserve, you know, the bid deserves to go back to this certain number and we'll start that again. That didn't really happen that much. Grant really put his hand in the air and kind of did it. He was upset with himself, but really, I don't know how controversial it ended up being. I'm actually proud of Grant for eating that one.
But it wasn't just the $67 superstars like Dak Prescott that caused a jump in QB spending. There were even price jumps when it came to 38-year-old veteran journeyman.
I gotta think, if you're listening to this, then you're probably fully aware of my love affair with Ryan Fitzpatrick. But, I mean, he won me a championship in 2010 and 2012 when he was starting for the Bills. And after 2012, the Bills let him go. And ever since, he's just been this career backup bouncing from team to team, where he, you know, seemingly gets a few starts every year somehow, no matter what team he goes to. The Jets, the Titans, the Bucks, the Dolphins. He always ends up in the starting lineup for these teams and has a couple games where he, you know, drops 40 or something and shocks everybody and everyone gets excited. And I've gotten in on a few of those, but I just always looked at him as this great value second quarterback. And when he signed with Washington and I realized, you know, they're not drafting a rookie, there's, you know, no one laying in wait, he is just the starting quarterback for this team. It's the first time since 2012 I was like, he's going to be on my team and nobody's going to stop me from getting him. So I tried to be lay low on it a little bit, but we all got together, went golfing at the Elms in July, and Ryan wouldn't stop chirping about him. And at this point, I knew I wasn't going to be able to be quiet about it, so I might as well just embrace it. And I just wouldn't shut up about Ryan Fitzpatrick leading up to the draft after that, which, you know, probably was a bad decision in hindsight. Got Ryan to bid up too much, but I had to have him.
The much-anticipated Ryan Fitzpatrick nomination was probably the most theatrical bidding in the history of the league. Evan and Ryan, back and forth, dollar for dollar, each kicking out at two like a WWE pay-per-view match, and the crowd ate it up. Let's listen in.
Go. Yeah! 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 21 going once.
Get up. Whoa.
Get it up. 21 get it up going twice.
Oh! Up there! Up there!
22! 22 going once, 22 going twice.
Three going twice.
Yeah! 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 Oh! 25 going once. 25 going twice. Yeah!
That was bad.
He's done.
26 going once.
He's done.
26 going twice.
Come on.
26 old.
That was bad.
I mean, it was just goofy. He would raise his paddle, and I would fall on the floor like I was in pain. And then going once, going twice, I'd jam it in the air at the last second. You know, it was very just over the top and ridiculous, culminating in that final. He bids 25, which was the number I had on my sheet. You know, I was hoping to get him for 15. And I thought, you know what, he's my guy, I'll do it. I'll go up to 25, that'll be the number. And he bids 25, and I walk out of the room into the side room. I was like, oh my gosh. But, you know, I might have left it there, but the fact that everyone was just going nuts for it, it became such a show. I was like, well, I can't let him have him. And I, going once, going twice, and I dive back into the room with the paddle in the air for 26. So, you know, it was a blast. Ended up ruining my season at the end of the day, but I said at the time, you know, it was so much fun, even if he fucks me over and ruins my whole season, you know, it was worth it. End of the day, in hindsight, I mean, I don't know if that was true, but it was certainly fun.
I think maybe we both got it carried away a little bit. We both got into the heat of the moment. Evan and I had built it up a little bit over the course of the weekend, maybe even up on GroupMe heading into the draft, and you know, we had to put on a show, and kind of backfired on Evan considering he had a bad hip like the second quarter of week one. But I mean, I didn't really work out for me either because I had OP problems all year. But I mean, when Fitzy got up there and I was like, you know, I need an OP, I saw you weren't going to stop, but I was like, I have to get the people going. And I think we maybe got 10 extra dollars into him than we should have.
That was one of the most legendary nominations and auction bidding of all time. That was just electric, with Evan and Ryan just completely playing it up too from a WWE standpoint. I'm pretty sure Evan would walk out of the room on a couple of them, came running back in saying he wanted the higher bid. And then Ryan was playing it up too. He'd be sitting there waiting for the two count and then was going for another bid. Those bravo to both of those guys within the league for making that a memorable nomination.
Unbelievable. We'll never forget it. Thought it was a work. Didn't know if Ryan actually wanted him. Thought Evan was ruining his season right off the bat. Just a lot of different emotions going through my head at the same time. Basically, it was just me sitting there wondering, is this real? And it was.
The only nomination of the day that may have outshined the veteran quarterback was a rookie. The San Francisco 49ers traded up to select Trey Lance third overall in the NFL draft. And while some in the league had their concerns about the unproven North Dakota State prospect, two league members viewed him as a league-winning type draft pick.
It's one of those things where you get caught up in the preseason videos, all the articles. You know, you thought Trey Lance was going to be, you know, having that rookie season, not directly rookie season, but the first year of Lamar starting. I was convinced. I'd saw enough videos. The combination of just his size, speed, the Kyle Shanahan offense, and coupled with the fact that Kyle Shanahan almost wished death upon Jimmy Garoppolo at the end of last year. Thought that was kind of be, you know, that was the final straw there, and wasn't, you know, really anticipating Jimmy G being the starter, you know, maybe for the first few weeks, but for the whole season, really didn't expect that. So I had a pretty good feeling he was going to be on the team. $31, that's a little bit of a different story, kind of overzealous on that end. But, you know, no regrets. And, you know, next year is going to be, don't want to say something similar, but who would I, what kind of man would I be to, you know, turn my back on Trey Lance after really, you know, believing in him? Did he let me down? Yes. But at the same time, you know, that's a rookie quarterback and something that, you know, you got to take that risk.
Yeah. I mean, he was kind of a, I wasn't going to go ridiculous. I mean, I ended up going ridiculous anyway, but he's kind of a blank check guy. I thought it was a given he was starting, but obviously was wrong there. But yeah, that kind of ties in with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think we all have our own guys, and he had been my guy for, you know, almost a month, and I was kind of set on getting him. And you set your mind that early, and it kind of takes a life of its own when the draft comes. But I think we're all happy we didn't get him, because I only think he started, what, one or two games all year. So I would have never guessed that, and I completely whiffed on that. But I was expecting him to start, you know, from week one. And, you know, I'm always a fan of those athletic quarterbacks. So
Pat Tyner and David Devine came into the draft with a plan: get Trey Lance. Tyner took the stand to nominate Lance at $5, and for the slightest of moments, it sounds like he is going to get him for $7. But enter David Devine. The back and forth begins. We once again apologize for the audio quality, but let's listen in.
Trey Lance $5, 6 to rack, 7 to Mandy. Trey Lance for 7 going once. Trey Lance for 7 going twice. 8, 9 to me. Trey Lance for 9 going once. Going twice. Yeah. 11 to me. Trey Lance 11 going once. Going twice. Whoa. 13.
Come on. Three, guys,
13 once. 13 to me going twice. 15 to me going once. 15 to me going twice. 17 to me going once. 17 to me going twice.
This is hot.
That's
19.
To me going once.
Yeah.
19 to me going twice. 21 to me going once.
Oh my
21
God.
To me going twice.
Oh my God, I love this.
23 to me going twice. 25 to me going once.
What?
25 to me going twice. I'm at 25, babe. 25 to me going once. 25 to me going twice.
What the fuck? Go!
That?
Let's go!
Give it to
him.
27 to me going once. 27 to me going twice.
Oh my God.
They don't want to make the playoffs. I really want to get on this.
I want in so bad.
29 to me going once. 29 to me going twice.
Start my back.
29 to me going twice.
Oh my God.
31 to me going once. 31 to me going twice.
Jimmy G's going to play.
Oh my God, that was hot.
What the fuck, dude? You're making fun of Max?
I was confused. There was a lot of hype going into it, and confused why he went for the amount of money that he did. Not confused that it was that Dave was in on him, because that's just a classic person, like just a different type of skill set at the position, guy that you don't know about, exciting coming out of the draft season. You know, things like that check all the boxes for Dave, but I never in a million years thought it was going to be that much money for a guy that ended up starting, I think, twice his whole rookie season.
I don't know. It was kind of funny. Like, Pat usually has a guy like that a guy or two that he really wants on his team. So it just happened to be Trey Lance, and
it did not make any sense to me.
I mean, Trey had a lot of hype going in. I mean, we even talked to that North Dakota fan at the bar in Nashville, and he said, stay away from him. He doesn't trust him.
Some people disagree with me on this, but I was flashing back to Sam Bradford 2015. Yeah, Louie up there as the auctioneer. This time it's Pat, going back and forth, dollar for dollar with Dave, just well over what everyone else was interested in spending on this guy, and they just wouldn't stop. And you know, there wasn't maybe as much of the, oh, come on, Pat, just let him have him, you know, leave him on the hook for this guy thing as there was with the Sam Bradford thing. But it really felt very reminiscent of that. Of just the auctioneer going up against Dave and taking that extra dollar over and over again. It was ridiculous.
I mean, I can't say I've been used to it because it's usually Louie. But to be honest, having Pat, who's a respected owner, you know, he has a great reputation. It kind of, you know, juiced it even more, I think, because, you know, Pat wants him and I want, you know, Louie. If Louie wants him, you're kind of second guessing yourself. But if Pat wants him, I mean, he, like I said, he's a respected owner. If we both want him, it must be for a reason. So, turns out we were both wrong.
There was even one point, I believe, that I said, fuck it, and started to turn around and put Dave on his team. You know, looking back, was that the best nomination etiquette? Maybe not. Clearly, we have some work to do on that end, you know, league-wide. I think this year was better, all things considered, but I kind of blacked out there for a second, being honest. That's really the only thing I remembered was towards the end, was getting really pissed with Dave. Can't blame him, you know. Maybe it was his guy, too. Would have been great to stick him with him and never start in a game, or started only two games this year. But, you know, one of those nominations where you kind of just black out and, you know, you end up paying $31 for Trey Lance.
But while this renewed emphasis on quarterbacks was playing out, one league member found himself taking a different path, investing heavily in the running back position.
Najee sold to Max for $31.
It is sold to Max for $42.
$35 to Max?
Sold
to Max for
$24.
$20 to Max, Josh Jacobs.
Are you kidding me?
Sold to Max for $9.
Good for you, Max.
Max, enjoy your seven fucking
Max, you're a terrorist.
Within the span of 15 picks, Max Julian picked up Steelers rookie Najee Harris for $31, Packers running back Aaron Jones for $42, Bengals back Joe Mixon for $35, and the Seahawks Chris Carson for $24. A round later, he would snatch Josh Jacobs for $20, and a round after that, he grabs Jets rookie Michael Carter for $9, spending a total of $161 on six running backs. The league's previous record is 135.
I was so excited. I put in so much research, and I had the system where I'd used traditional draft values, and I thought I outsmarted everybody. Well, not outsmarted, but I said outsmarted isn't fair. I had a plan that I was very excited that I thought would work, and the quarterback values were so high. And I just, traditionally running backs had been valued a little bit higher for where my system had them ranked for how much you should pay for them. So I ended up with so many running backs, and my system was clearly flawed. And it didn't work.
I mean, Max and running back spending really put a couple teams in a pickle, which I mean, kind of included in myself. I can't say I was really all in on Antonio Gibson, but I saw Max just wasn't going to stop. And so I just started bidding on every running back kind of too. But like, he kind of really screwed Grant over because Grant was in on doing the same thing, just bidding on running backs. And Max just kept getting the ones because Grant has his. I'm not overpaying for this guy.
I hated it because it absolutely destroyed the way that I was drafting, because I'm used to being able to pick up decent RB2 values, and he did not allow that to happen even after it did not make any sense for his team. It led to me and others scrambling, which from a disruption standpoint is okay, but I don't believe that that is a strategy that can lead to a team ever having success. If you're going to sink your ship on running backs when so many owners are willing to go RB0, and he went the absolute opposite. So the fact that he did that and was willing to commit to it absolutely disrupted my draft strategy and likely many others.
I just think it was viewed as stupid, and I think Max set a precedent for a very great draft strategy. And honestly, I think next year, somebody hoarding top-tier wide receivers would be a very smart thing to do. Because if Max does it correctly, if he keeps Najee Harris and he deals Michael Carter or somebody else that he hoarded to Casey, Max is looking very good. Unfortunately, he picked the wrong guys to deal after his strong arming.
It was absolutely outrageous. I was sitting there needing a running back, and Max just kept bidding on everyone and every single running back. And I was like, well, all right, I guess he's just hoarding running backs, which I figured he was going to try to make a trade down the line. I really wanted Najee, but Max was adamant. Like, he just kept bidding on Najee, going after him. I think it was that 2017 or 2018 Steeler fan in him coming back out. And that's when I made the decision, like, okay, well, Max is cornering the market on running back, so I'm going to go ahead and shift my draft strategy around.
It was quite a different strategy that Casey Irwin deployed. But even before Max even started acquiring running backs, Casey had spent $215 of his $250 on five players, none of them running backs. And after Max's spending spree, he would throw in another $13 on tight end Mark Andrews, and was still sitting without a running back.
It was just a crazy draft because everyone was going kind of, I felt, running back heavy, which I guess in theory was only Max that was going running back heavy, and there was just so much going on to where I started just trying to corner the market on wide receivers, which, I mean, that was my plan going into it, but I didn't expect having all those three receivers on my team.
Well, as is tradition, as part of Titty City, Casey and I are sitting right next to each other, so I see a little bit more insight into the draft style of Casey Irwin, and I can say it's a pretty wild ride most years. And this year, I was like, man, he has got great wide receivers. I mean, but he is going to have struggle to get running backs. And I think he thought he was going to get like J.K. Dobbins for a little bit cheaper than he went for. And once he went that, I think he ended up buying Mark Andrews maybe too. And he had like $7 from a running back like Casey Year. And we're in worse territory than the Fort Lauderdale draft where he spent like 13 on running backs.
I mean, I think Casey's notorious for, you know, nap time. He loves to blow the load early and then take that nap time and build that beer wall.
I was sitting next to Casey. I had no clue what he was doing, but he was getting absolute stars. Every single one of those guys is a star. And it was just like, I guess Casey's going to be the wide receiver guy this year. It was entertaining.
Absolutely hated it. I thought it was one of the worst teams assembled.
As we were going through the draft, Evan looks over at Chibi and goes, oh my God, Irwin's got five players.
Just classic Casey. No hesitation. Don't be afraid to spend early. And, you know, he put himself in a position where I was concerned for Max about the situation he had gotten himself into. I was far more concerned about what Casey was doing. I thought he was going to be in trouble with just, he didn't have any running backs.
I had some people that I had in the back of my mind that were going to be cheaper running backs, but I mean, clearly I felt the need to make a trade. I had to get out of those three receivers because even though I'm a notorious wide receiver heavy guy, that was almost entering Batchman territories.
A team with no running backs and a team with far too many. It was a match made in trade heaven. Max and Casey eventually link up for a mid-draft trade, where Casey acquired two running backs in Najee Harris and Chris Carson at the cost of Calvin Ridley and $10.
I thought I completely fleeced Max because I thought he was giving me $10. Instead, I was giving him $10, so that kind of got lost in translation. I'm sure the wall had something to do with it on the table. But I was feeling good even with the $10. Like, I got rid of Ridley, even though I was very high on Ridley this year. They got me two running backs, and then at that point, it's like, okay, I can kind of have some relief, as I have two quarterback OP already. I had two solid, strong wide receiver candidates, and then got my two running backs. So I was feeling good at that point.
Well, it was clear that he was an option. And I mean, I was looking at everybody because I ended up with, I just had an obscene amount of running backs at the draft. And it was just kind of ridiculous the way things were going. But I my system valued those guys at the numbers. And I kept looking over at Casey and thinking, all right, he's got to like Najee. I know Casey. I know he loves the Steelers, and Najee is so exciting. And eventually we made a deal, and it was really controversial. I remember Grant thought I bailed Casey out. CJ thought Casey bailed me out. It was quite a big trade that ended up really helping him. And if I had kept Calvin Ridley, it would have been absolute disaster for my team.
Max bailed him out. But at the same time, it felt like Max got pretty good value.
I was a fan of Casey's team before and after the trade. But, you know, he got it. He got his Steelers running back, so I can't fault him there. And I was a fan of Ridley at the time, too.
We can do the what-ifs all day about what if Max would have traded a different running back and given up Aaron Jones instead of Najee Harris. What if Calvin Ridley didn't retire in the middle of the season? But, you know, at the end of the day, these guys kind of have their values on draft day. You know, if Najee was worth a lot more than 30, he probably would have gone for a lot more than 30. So it was a good value trade on the day. They were both in a bad spot. They both needed bailed out. And yeah, I thought it was a good move for both of them.
Najee Harris was a name with a lot of buzz going into the draft, as were Ryan Fitzpatrick and Trey Lance. But no one was being talked about more than the controversial quarterback in Houston, Deshaun Watson. An annual fantasy football darling was being accused of sexual assault. The question around the NFL was, would Watson play in 2021? With an early draft and little clarity on what would happen, Watson was a highly controversial option on draft day. So much so that some league members argued he should be pulled from the draft or treated in some way differently than other players. But at the end of the day, the decision was made to keep him in the player pool, and he was drafted for $7 by none other than Louis Thomas, who looked at the pick as a low-risk, high-reward lottery ticket.
I was so excited that we were on our way back from Nashville. I stopped and got a lottery ticket, and I won $10 off it. So I was excited, and I was very deep in the inside. I mean, there was a guy named FlighterJet69 that was keeping me updated on Twitter. I didn't think the guy was lying to me at the beginning that he was going to play all year. You know, these guys from Twitter, you know, you believe everything that they say.
Certainly, was nervous. I know Louis has a degree, doctorate from Falmouth Law, and he was saying that Deshaun Watson was going to be coming back throughout the entire season. And obviously that would have been a huge situation if he did.
From my 2 years of law experience, that it wasn't going to be his legal troubles that were going to get him. It was going to be the settlement, if he was going to be bullheaded or not. And he held his ground and got his money to sit out this year, and it'd be interesting to see what happens next year with Deshaun.
I was curious how much he was going to go for, because, you know, you have to remember this was in early August. You didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, we're talking about the NFL. I mean, I definitely could have seen him at some point take the field. You know, and he had already reported a training camp with the Texans. So it's like, man, this guy, I don't think he's going to play, but definitely has a chance to. I mean, that's what made it so crazy. And to only go for $7, I thought about it.
But what if Deshaun Watson is a player this year? Louis Thomas probably easily wins the TTFL title, even with Derrick Henry getting hurt. So, I don't know. Talk about what ifs, but I think, well, what a league changer that could have been. But hindsight, who cares? Because every league had a draft a month later, and it was still the big question mark. So our problem is we draft too early, but luckily a decision wasn't made before normal drafts. So everybody across America was in the same boat. It all worked out, but God, that would have been nuts.
There was really kind of this consensus after the draft that Louis had done a really good job of managing his risk compared to previous years where we've seen him make kind of some wild picks. You know, Deshaun might not play all year, but he only spent $7 on him. But he also went out and got Michael Thomas, who got some surgery. It was like the week of the draft or right before the draft, and people were saying, well, he should have done this in like January, but he waited until the preseason started because he wanted to do it on the Saints' time, not his own time. And that was like, at best, he's not going to be back until week 6, but also, like, I don't think this guy's going to play either. If you're the Saints, how can you put him in? But I'm just like Deshaun, he only spent $5 on Michael Thomas. So there are really these low-risk, high-reward moves he made. But then, on top of that, he went out and got a couple of rookies who he spent decent rookie money on, Devonta Smith and Kyle Pitts. And then he didn't overpay for Saquon Barkley, but still, you don't know what you're going to get from Saquon. Felt like a risky pick, and I thought Louis was taking on a lot of risk, in my opinion.
Pretty sure I coined it as I woke up the next day, was looking through the teams, or maybe after the draft even. I was looking in the app and just scrolling, and I'm pretty sure I announced out loud, Louis's team is an acid trip.
I thought it was pretty wild by Louis, because I felt like he was doing a good job. He was doing a good job of building his team, and then he had some couple of like decisions like that, and you kind of like leave the little head scratched. And
you know, I liked it. I thought that it was a boom or bust team, and one that if everything hit at the prices that he paid, it would have been an unbelievable team. So I had no qualms with the way he drafted. I thought that he may have taken maybe one or two risks that I wouldn't have, but at the same time, that's how you win a championship.
He was team red flag. You know, it was, and he said it himself, he admitted it during the draft. He's like, my team is going to be absolutely incredible and pop off and be amazing, or we're going to be horrible. But he was team red flag for me. He's like, every single guy I put a little note beside ended up on Louis' team, which is, you know, I'm not surprised at all by that.
This is what he does. He goes all in on very stupid things. He's basically a gambler, and he's going all in every week on a wild parlay. And the one time that he hits, he's going to win the title with ease, but he hasn't hit yet, so not too sure what this kid wants. Like, it's not very smart. And that's why Louis sucks at fantasy sports.
I mean, this year I went into, into the draft thinking, I'm the most electric owner, most polarized. People say it's CJ, but it's me. Obviously, I dictate what happens in the TTFFL from the bullshit standpoint of the stuff that's irrelevant. So, this year I thought, it'd just be risky as fuck. I did it, I believe, last year during COVID year as well. It didn't hit me. This year I was, and it helped because I made a lot of the deals I made were with the risky players at the right time.
The expectations for the draft are so high each year. With the amount of hype put on the event, it seems impossible that it could continue to deliver. Yet somehow, each year, the drama, the pageantry, the twists and turns, the draft never disappoints. It has come to its conclusion. The stage is set. Trade discussions have begun. Screen time numbers skyrocket as league members stare endlessly into the rosters on their phones. It is time to bid farewell to our host city of Nashville. The Music City has been good to this league, and it is time to go out with a bang, leaving everyone with one question. Is the Thomas curse real?
I did nothing. I did nothing to do anything with that night. That was a special. The draft was continuing. It was a Pat versus Casey bidding war, and Pat came up on top.
You know, the Thomas curse has been beaten to death this year with the discourse and GroupMe. There's been a lot of talk about it. I understand it. There's something to it. But people seem to forget this isn't the first curse that I've had in the TCFFL. So we don't need to rehash the whole storyline of the first curse, but lo and behold, I won the title in 2015, beat the curse. So honestly, I'm looking forward to the challenge of ending the Thomas curse once and for all. You know, I don't think Grant's going to be able to do it. He's got that monkey on his back for quite a while. So I don't want to beat it to death too much more. We talked about it entirely too much this year, but you know, I'm can only, you know, look myself in the mirror and say, you know, it's not going to go away. There's really nothing known that I can do to end this curse other than just strapping on my big boy pants and, you know, winning the championship. So, you know, we're looking forward to the adversity and ending this once and for all, like I said.
But I don't believe there's a curse. I just think that Pat had a bad year. I mean, you spent $30 on Trey Lance, that you could use that elsewhere. But it can't be a curse when the person who's the Thomas who's initiating it says it's okay. Now, if I said no, and he did it, then I would 100% curse him.
I'm very grateful that Pat was so gracious to lift the curse from me that words cannot explain. The fact that Pat is willing to wear that burden for years to come and likely will until Rue is able to have one of his Instagram comments step in and take that place, it means a lot. So I'm happy with where my franchise currently sits. I hope that Pat can wear that scarlet letter for as long as he may need to until Casey takes it from him. But it was a down year, but a great year at the same point, because I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Hard Bids is a production of the Tiger Township Fantasy League Media Department. Executive produced by Evan Julian. Our narrator was, you know him, as Andy the Man. It's Andy. Our theme music was Under Pressure by Michael Corbin. Thanks to Jock Jams, Michael Buffer, and 2 Unlimited for the Let's Get Ready to Rumble / Pump Up the Jam combo. Background music by Michael Corbin, Zakhar Valaha, and Alex Grohl. Thanks to all those who took time to be interviewed for this project and wasted time on additional interviews that were unused. It's a learning process. We're getting there. And we're excited to announce that we'll see you in Austin, Texas in 2022 for another edition of Hard Bids inside the TTFFL Draft. Until then, thanks for listening, and God bless the Tiger Township Fantasy Football League.